Welcome, everyone. Another episode of The Flow Show. This is number 197. Very special guest. First, a message from our sponsor, Club GG, where you can make clubs for free, play with your friends, and win hundreds of thousands of dollars in prizes monthly. With that being said, Ben Mintz, Barstool Mintzy's in the house. Ben, how are you?
I'm doing well, man. Thank you for having me on. We've been trying to make this happen, I guess, for about a month now, juggling both our schedules. Pretty busy, so I'm glad we're making this work.
Yes, busy is good. There's definitely a lot to talk about. You've been fresh in the poker news. We'll definitely be talking about that Moneymaker Tour thing that was recent. But more importantly, you are a busy man. You were let go from Barstool for some controversy and then rehired. Could you maybe just first, let's start with that because people know you. What happened? What happened with this?
Well, I mean, I'll tell you what happened. I ain't hiding nothing. I was on my show, Wake Up Mintzy, and I was just a joke, like karaokeing a rap song, and I misread and slipped on a lyric that was not the one you want to slip on. Yeah. And I knew it immediately, and my face turned white, and I apologized. And, you know, I mean, anybody that knows me knows that's certainly not how I live my life. And basically, what happened was Penn Gaming owned Barstool, and like Dave Portnoy's head of Barstool, and Dave went to bat for me and was like, look, he obviously made a mistake. Like, if you know him, you know, you can't fire him over this. But Penn overruled him and said, you know, they fired me over it. And Dave like came out and did a big video saying, I totally disagree with this. And Dave backed up his word and hired me for Brick Watch. These are his watches I'm wearing right now. Okay. And so he hired me a couple weeks later to sell watches for him. And I did that for a few months and worked for Poker Go during World Series of Poker and was kind of doing some stuff. And then Dave bought Barstool back for like a dollar crazy deal in early August. And his first move when he bought Barstool back was to hire me back. And so it was a very wild cycle. It was a crazy thing to go through that, especially in this current climate we live in the world right now. But, you know, ultimately I realized how blessed I am really when I went through it. Cause you find out who's in your corner when you go through a scandal. And this was a huge one. I mean, this was like New York Post. I mean, this was people writing about this in the UK. It was on Fox News. I mean, it was crazy. It was everywhere I looked. It was on Tucker Carlson. It was nuts. And, you know, I think ultimately people knew, you know, anybody that follows me and knows me gave me, I actually got the benefit of the doubt on it. Because people see how I live my life, public eye day to day. And, you know, I always try to live for the greater good and give back to good causes and stuff. And I think people know that. And, you know, ultimately, kind of landed on my feet through a tough deal. And, you know, I think I kept the right attitude about it too. Nobody likes the victim woe is me crap. And, you know, just shut my mouth and, you know, back with Barstool and everything's good. But, you know, I mean, I still definitely get some trolls on Twitter and stuff and bring it up. But
I want to ask you, so it was a live thing right here. We had a recorded podcast. You do a lot of content. You have your podcast. Like, is it kind of, again, taking that, knowing that you're a great guy, right? People know you, that you're a good person, and this was like a mistake, whatever, right? Like whatever happened, however it was said, is it a learning? Like, wow, you got to be so careful. It's crazy this day and age about cancel culture and like, you know, some accents that's kind of messed up, right? You can like misspeak or misslip or
I mean, like,
and then you get like just crushed on it. That's like kind of, it's a bit like, it's kind of heavy. You know what I mean? It's sort of like,
no doubt. Well, we have a dump button on my show, Wake Up Mintzy. So we have a minute dump button just to be careful. But the big thing I learned was just not karaoke rap.
That's good lesson.
Cause that thing. And, you know, I was literally just reading song lyrics and I just flubbed on a song lyric, man. And there was no malicious intent. It was an honest mistake. And anybody that follows me know, I mean, my awareness is very, very poor. And so I constantly make these like honest mistakes and stuff because I don't know. That's kind of who I am, but I'm also really sharp with math and numbers and stuff. I guess we're all blessed differently. So, now I have the minute dump button and I just don't karaoke rap and my life goes on because it's not like, I mean, I definitely use those words in my vocabulary. You know, I'm actually in Barstool. I'm dialed down compared to most of these people. I don't say F-bombs or GD or any of that stuff on camera. Like I'm a Christian. Like that's what's ironic about all this is I'm kind of, you know,
more conservative.
I'm actually a little dialed down, you know?
Right. It was unlikely situation, but you learn from it. Again, that's a big thing in life is to take away the positives, right? It's not about what happens, how you react. Sounds like you've got some other experiences and sort of rebounded and now you're back and everything's that's great.
Well, it was interesting right when it happened. I was like, I better get my poker game sharp because I'm not gonna be able to get a job for 5 years. It's current climate we're in. And that was, it was the exact opposite. You know, I was very blessed. I had a bunch of job offers pretty quick, and I decided to sit through them. And, you know, shout out to PokerGo. I know you know those guys. I'm good friends with Brent Hanks and Jeff Platt.
Legend.
I know
you
did some stuff with them. You know, that was a cool, I took a 6-week job with them to cover WSOP. That was a perfect like summer job bridge while I figured out the next step. And, you know, ultimately, it was fun. It was fun. You know, everything kind of worked out well. And, you know, and now I've, it was crazy. So I moved to Chicago. We opened up a new Barstool office in Chicago beginning of November. And when I got rehired in August, Big Cat, who's our number two guy in the company and head of the Chicago office, sat me down. He's like, look, we're not going to, you know, your job's not on the line, but, and I'm not going to ever tell you what to do. But having said that, you'd be an idiot if you don't move to Chicago and live in our new office. And so right when I'm hearing that from him, who I, you know, look up to just tremendously, I said, yeah, I'll move to Chicago. And so I moved here beginning of November. And I've been here, I guess, about, you know, what is that, 4 months now? Or 5 months now, and it's great. So it's kind of funny. It was like I turned 40 and went through that scandal, and it's kind of like the end of the first half of life, and this is kind of the beginning of the second chapter is what it feels like.
Yeah, and tell me about, let's talk on each, because it Portnoy and Big Cat. So these guys are obviously, Dave, going to bat for you in this sort of a, where they're, you know, people might give you a hard time, and then you said Big Cat you trust and mentor. What's your relationship with them? How long have you known these guys, and what's your, how did you get into Barstool specifically?
So I got hired by Barstool in early October of 2020 during COVID. And it was really, it was like lightning. I mean, I was a sports radio host in Louisiana for 4 years in Shreveport, like North Louisiana, which I always equate, that was like single A. And then I got hired by ESPN Baton Rouge, which is the LSU flagship. So it's one of the best radio stations in the South. And I'd actually only been there 3 months, but that was the job that I've been kind of striving for years. Cause you know, I loved them. I mean, that was a big deal to me. And then what happened, it was on October, like first or second, I was watching this I went to Ole Miss and I was watching this Ole Miss Kentucky game, and Ole Miss won in overtime by one when this Kentucky kicker missed an extra point. And I just did a post game video, just like super fired up doing the Ole Miss hottie toddy cheer. Kind of for my social media, kind of being pumped up. And I posted the video online, didn't think anything of it. And Sunday morning, the next day, I'm driving to Natchez, Mississippi. I did like a Sunday morning NFL show with the old LSU quarterback and Patriots quarterback, Rohan Davey and Jimmy Ott. And, you know, my phone just goes off like a nuclear cannon. And I look down and it's Dave Portnoy retweeting SEC Football Hits Different. It's the video of me yelling the Ole Miss hottie toddy at the thing. I was like, wow, that's pretty wild. So I park. And then I looked down and Dave Portnoy follows me on Twitter. And I was like, all right, like something's going on here. And then I checked my DMs and he's like, hey, is that you on that video? And I said, damn right, that's me. And he said, well, we're ready for you to come work for us at Barstool. And then I got
that's awesome.
Very no cool. interview, nothing. They told me I could move up to New York or stay in the South. And at first I was like, oh, I'll just stay in the South. It'll be great. And then I thought about 2 or 3 days. Like, man, you've been grinding for 4 years in Bossier City, Louisiana. And you know, everything you've done, this is your huge opportunity. Like you have to move to New York and just give this a shot. And so I moved up there in Halloween of 2020. And that's how it started.
And tell me about Big Cat, because he's, again, someone that seems like a big personality and a big part of the company. What is his role specifically there?
Well, so Pardon My Take is the number one sports podcast in the world. And that's his baby, him and PFT Commenter. So that's like his big thing. But then he also is the host of The Yak, which is the big daily Barstool show. And then he's the head of the Chicago office. And man, just a matter of respect I have for him as a person. I mean, he works just nonstop. He's got 3 kids under 4 at home. Good family guys. So all he does is work and do family stuff. And that's it. But he's just such a good leader. And, you know, I'm just so lucky to have a guy like him in my corner in life. And he just said, you know, I need you here for the content. And so, you know, my role, he said it before, we kind of talked about it. I'm kind of like a 6-man of Barstool. He throws me on the Yak or streams or whatever, and he knows he can get good content out of me. And, you know, and actually what's funny about Big Cat, this ties in with poker, he's about to be my poker backer too. And so I have backers, and he's in the process of buying them out. So
I was looking at your resume, man. I knew you played poker. It's the first time I've looked at your Hendon Mob, and I was like, wow, like you've played. You have a deeper run. You're better probably at your hobby than my profession. You got a deeper run in the main than I've had. I mean, that's deep, man. 75th, 2011.
Yeah, it was wild. Day 6, man.
That's gotta be a deep run.
So I was a poker pro from 06 to 14, and you know, I was like online, I had a good bit of success. I wasn't one of the top guys, you know, I wasn't like a 100 rebound guy, but like I did really well on Bodog and Full Tilt specifically, and had a good career there. And then I lived in New Orleans. And so I'd play at Harrah's New Orleans and like Beau Rivage Biloxi. And I kind of hit the Southern circuit, and I was one of the better Southern tournament players. And I play online, and I had a really, you know, good career. Obviously, like everybody else, Black Friday hit me pretty hard in 2011. And I still just switched to playing live, and I had a lot of success in 2011 live poker. But by the time, you know, I actually did the expat thing, and I was in Rosarito for 6 months playing online, I just hated it. Was like, you know, I don't care as much about online poker to be away from my family and friends in my life.
Yeah.
And then kind of hit a spot in early 2014 where I was just a little bit of a crossroads. Like, had a big bankroll kind of whittled down, and you know, I'd been in New Orleans for like 8 years, probably partying too hard and stuff. And so I realized like, hey, like this isn't going the way you want it to go. And so I actually went back and finished my degree at Ole Miss when I was like 31 for a year, and kind of reset, got my finance degree, like took a part-time college job, whatever. And, you know, it was good because, you know, the gambling world, like you got to kind of, it's not reality, especially with how desensitized you get to money.
Yep.
And so it was good for me to be a broke college kid for a year, finish school. And then after that, I got into sports radio. So
I got to ask you, someone I'm born and raised in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I think Portnoy either went there, has ties there.
Yeah,
he did go to Michigan. Mm. Okay. I didn't know if he went there. I knew he was very affiliated with it. So I grew up born and raised there, obviously Michigan football, Big Ten, very, you know, passionate. I went to South Carolina, played soccer there, SEC. So those two like big conferences. You went to SEC.
I grew up, I'm like a mutt between Louisiana and Mississippi because my dad went to LSU and my mom went to Ole Miss, and I've got Mississippi family.
I got to ask
ESPN Baton Rouge too.
What is your take on, you know, Washington coming to the Big Ten and these conferences now? Because like there is something nice about Michigan, Ohio State, or Ole Miss, LSU, and these things, and I feel like the rivalries in these conferences sort of disband. Now you got like Pac-12 that's coming over to the Big Ten. It's kind of weird, right? There's like 18 teams, and it's just kind of, what are your thoughts on all this with the conferences combined?
I mean, it's coming on. I'll tell you what it is. Look for in the next 2 to 3 years, the SEC and the Big Ten to just succeed from the NCAA, and they're going to have like 16 or 18 teams in each, and they're just going to have their own thing.
Wow.
That's what I think is coming. And, you know, the only dominoes left to fall, like I think Florida State probably ends up in the SEC. Maybe Clemson does too. I think there's a couple of dominoes left on that front. But like you saw USC, UCLA, Washington, and Oregon go to the Big Ten. That was part of it too. But I think that the days of the NCAA stuff's numbered, and I think you're going to see them do their own thing sooner or later. So I think this bit set up.
Very interesting. And what about NIL? What's your good, bad? How are you figuring this out?
Oh, I'm real involved with that. So the Ole Miss one, the Grove Collective at Ole Miss, like, I mean, we're the leading one maybe in America, and like what Ole Miss has built with Lane Kiffin. And Ole Miss got all the top players in the transfer portal this year. And actually, these brick watches I was selling for the NIL for Ole Miss, which is Dave's watch company. But it's a crazy new world. But hopefully I'll find a better way to regulate it, because I'm all for these kids getting paid. Like, this is capitalism, it's finest, especially when they come from, like, a lot of them come from no money and stuff. And, you know, who makes the NFL? I mean, you got 130 college teams with 85 scholarships. The NFL, you got 32 teams with 53 roster spots, 60 total. I mean, there's 1,800 people in the world, the league. So I want these kids to make money. I'm all for it. I just hope they figure out a way to regulate it like a little better, because right now, totally the wild.
Yeah, the transfer. I noticed this year in particular, like with the portal, and now it's just like there was like the bowl games. You got like everyone sitting out. People are moving over. Like the starters aren't even really playing. You know what I mean? It's kind of weird, right? Like it just feels like there's the I get the 1 year sit is aggressive, but it just seems like, it seems like chaos, honestly. Everyone's bidding up and making deals, and it just seems, at the same time, there's regulation versus before where it was like under the table. So I don't know. I guess it's going to take a little while to stabilize, I would guess.
Yeah, I think what's happening, they need to, so the bowl game, now they're switching to 12-team playoff. The bowl game thing's dead. I mean, it's like they need to quit lying to themselves about it. And it's like you have the playoff and that's it. I actually wish they'd do bowl games like week zero or Labor Day weekend to just start the year. Like, I think it would be a real fun thing if you played like these bowl games beginning of the year when the fans are all pumped up and have saved money and can travel. I think that might be an alternative. They could try for that. It could work. But yeah, they got to quit lying to themselves about the bowl games for sure. But the portal thing's here, you know, it's here to stay. And like I said, I mean, I'm glad these players are making money ultimately. I mean, hopefully they'll figure out a way to regulate it a little better. But I mean, this is America. And you're looking at TV deals like the SEC and Big Ten have. I mean, why do these bureaucrats and universities deserve it all? And these players are the ones filling stadiums, you know?
Yeah, and you probably have to put in context, like, I know there's an LSU, I forget, Olivia or one of these girls, like, they're making multi-millions a year, whereas like, or let's take an NBA, Reese, right? An example where WNBA, what's the salary? It's like 120K a year. Is
yeah,
that
the
like
college things, the women's college thing is interesting because the women's college thing.
Yeah. They don't, Caitlin, why they're not going to go pro. So for the NCAA, that makes sense, right? They're basically holding their stars in, you know, but it's like, yeah, why would you leave if you're making $1 million or $2 million a year in college as a woman athlete than to go to that? What is the WNBA? I think it is like 100 is the max salary.
It's
like,
I don't think it's anything too crazy. That's for sure.
Yeah. It's interesting. And at Barstool specifically, could you explain the Penn Gaming deal? Cause I know it was like bought, it was sold and then.
I'll tell you what happened. So Penn bought Barstool and started the Barstool Sportsbook to be like Penn Sportsbook and brand, because Barstool is going to be the marketing arm of Penn. And then ultimately things didn't work. You know, really it was just the regulator stuff. It's because Barstool is always, you know, we're always edgy. And obviously I did not mean to have such a big hand in that, but my thing was certainly a big part of it.
Yep.
And ultimately Penn just, it was too hard to deal with the regulators and Barstool. So they decided to switch to ESPN. And so now they have ESPN Bet. They cut a huge deal with ESPN, just being safer and how big ESPN's brand is, which makes sense. You know, I get it. And when they went back to ESPN, ESPN doesn't like Barstool. And so basically they were in a tough spot having ESPN and Barstool. And so Dave was able to make a deal to where he got Barstool back. And so that's kind of what happened.
And is Barstool to give, what year did that start? And like, we literally started as a blog or what?
Yeah, it started as a newspaper in like 2003, and he'd like put them all over Boston. And then, you know, as the internet took over and print media went down, he, for a lot of years was a blog, and that's kind of the heartbeat of it and how it was. And then, it really picked up in 2016 when the Chernin Investment Group got involved in it and made a substantial investment. And so that was when they moved from Milton, Massachusetts to New York. And because they got some money, and then it really blew up then. And then I, you know, and then Penn got involved in early 2020 before COVID, and I got hired after that. But what was interesting, I wasn't like an old school stoolie. Like, I followed Dave Portnoy and I followed Big Cap. That was it.
Yep.
So when I got hired here, I think that actually helped me a lot, because these stoolies, I mean, the dedication and devotion just blows my mind in a good way. But and I'd have been one of those. I don't think I'd have adjusted as well, because I'd have been nervous. But you know, I came in here and was just like, look, I grind, you know, it's like, this is the next thing. I mean, I knew it was a big job, but I had 5 years of sports radio experience. And, you know, I have the gambling background with poker. And so, I mean, I just felt like I was ready for it. And, you know, I've only been nervous on camera a couple times here. So.
And what, how would you describe a stool? You said loyalty, and like, how does Barstool Sports sort of content and more edgy, and you said more kind of like, how would you describe that versus another competitor sort of sport?
Dave loves hiring he calls the misfits, but you know, it's just characters from all different walks of life. And he just, the thing is, they don't tell you, they just say, we hired you to be you, you be you. Literally, they don't tell you nothing. I mean, it's like crazy how little guidance they give you here. He's just like, we hire talented people and we just hope it works out. He's like, people always ask him, like, what's your strategy? He's like, I find talented people and we give them no strings at all. We just let them do whatever they want. And so Barstool, you know, someone like me, like, I'm not a guy that can wear, even though it's funny because I'm kind of wearing a suit today, but I'm not like a guy that's going to wear a suit to work. Like, I don't think I could ever be like an ESPN guy, but right. Barstool, you know, like, being gambling background and all, like, live music and poker and sports gambling, and just, you know, they're just like, you be you, man. That's what we hired you for. And so it's really fun to just basically get to do, like, I just get to be myself for a living. And to me, that's, I don't see how there's a more American dream than that.
That's awesome. I mean, and to give it, so literally that is Dave, who's the final when they make a hire? Cause you said Dave saw a clip.
Oh, Dave, it's like, reminds me of Vince McMahon chairing the board WWE back in the day. Dave's child. And like, Dave ultimately found me, and Dave and I obviously have a pretty wild employer-employee relationship, to say the least. But ultimately, he showed where he was on me when he had my back last year and hired me for Brick Watch and brought me back to Barstool. I mean, that, you know, I mean, we obviously we have it out and I piss him off all the time and all that. But, you know, ultimately, I felt like, you know, you saw where he stood with me when he did all that last year.
Well, sure. I love that, because I do know and I do see he does stand by you. But I do. This is a good segue into the incident here, because this is this title would mean it appears the other way. But I'm super curious how pissed on a scale of 1 to 100 he was, because this is like a poker player nightmare to be in a final table playing big money. You know, shout out to Chris Moneymaker, been on the pod before, has his tour started, the Moneymaker tour. If you don't know, Chris Moneymaker won the 2003 main event, kind of gets credit for the poker boom. You're there, you're supporting, you know, buddy of yours, you're there, you're playing the event, you make a final table. Talk me through the situation and how this all unfolded.
Okay, so this kind of unfolded. Like, Chris hit me up, you know, invited me to come down and play that tournament, kind of as an ambassador role, which I was all about. You know, I got to go to the beach, play poker, so I was in. And Barstool had this Barstool Combine that was sponsored on Monday. So the week before it, I talked to one of my guys here who's kind of like between Dave and me, you know, a guy you talk to about day-to-day here. And it was my fault. This is not his fault, because he's not a poker world guy, so he doesn't understand. You know, like, for us, you know, the poker world, it's its own lingo. I was like, look, I got this poker tournament in West Palm. I'll only miss Monday if I make the final table, you know. And he was just like, you know, kind of like in one ear and out the other. He's just like, good luck, you know. But I think good luck means I'm good.
Right.
Like, thinking it's okay if you make the final table. Like, not, he's just saying good luck, like, he's not paying attention, you know. And that's my fault, ultimately. It's not his. Because he's not a poker guy, you know what I mean? And so I think that's – so it was kind of misinterpreted on my part, but I'm not blaming anybody but me. And I was – you know, and the craziest part was I hit this, like, card from God. I got in – dude, I got in fours to tens on, like, a 10-8, 4-7 board and hit – like, when wow. I had fours to four spades, and there was – and he didn't have a spade, so I had a flush draw or four, and I hit quads on the river to get the chip lead before the final table. So, like, I would have busted then and just flown back and made the event.
Right.
And then,
yeah. You hit it, your chip leader, and it's $121,000 up top. I mean, it's a lot of money.
Guaranteed
9,000. So, like, literally, didn't he say at one point, what you win, he's going to deduct from your salary?
Yeah, he doesn't understand. Like, if you're not, the thing is with poker, it's its own world. Like, he'd understand. I'm backed, I'm in makeup. It's so
it's complicated. It's not just insane.
What I win, but I mean, I'm not like down like a fortune, but I mean, I didn't, you know, I wasn't getting any of that money unless I did better.
So you're actually squeezed. You're kind of in like a spot where you're actually going to take it out of your salary, but like you're sort of caught in the middle of like, there's not a really great solution. So what did you ultimately decide? How did
you go? I was like, I donated, I gave him it. So it was funny. It was a really funny clip on the Unnamed show he does, but I was like, look, I'm donating $1,000. And he just laughed in my face. And like, Dave, you understand, like, $1,000 is a lot of money to me. I'm like backed in makeup. I mean, I make a solid living at Barstool, but like, you know, it's just, he's got so much money at that, you know, money's all relative, but like, I thought that was like a pretty, you know, that wasn't nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then the West Palm Kennel Club matched my $1,000 and they're trying to do a charity tournament for it too. So ultimately, hopefully we'll end up raising $5,000 or $10,000 and that'll appease them a little bit. But
was it literally like your chip leader and you're like, all right, I got to get out. Did you leave? Did you?
No, I didn't leave. I was chip leader going to the final table and he called me. But the thing is, he videoed him calling me, like, you know, if it's content, I mean, he's pissed. I'm not downplaying it. He was pissed. I mean, like on a 1 to 100, he was probably an 80. Or 78, something like that. He wasn't happy because I get it, though. Think about it. We don't have – it's not like we have a sponsored event every day. And so if he doesn't come down on me that's a big deal, then he's opened up the floodgates for other people to start missing sponsored events. So I see why he's pissed. It's a, you know, hold the line. So he was really mad. I mean, there's no getting around it. But, like, if he's videoing the phone call and making content talking about it, then – you know, that's probably not the end of the world.
Gets a little bit of, there's some value there. But so then tell me though, so how did your style change? Did you just go more aggressive? You're like, all right, I'm going to try to win the tournament.
I kind of misplayed. I'm really pissed about this bust hand I had. I overplayed top two in a spot where I got in a weird spot where this dude bet 325 on like, it was a way, like a queen jack 9-4 board, but it was a multi-way pot pre-flop and I had queen jack. But he overbet the turn 325, and I was in a spot like 1.4 million where I thought calling the turn was leaky when he bet that big. But ultimately, ICM-wise, I mean, it wouldn't have been leaky because you got to hold on to your 25. You know, there's just so much value in being alive.
Yep.
And so I made a terrible shove in the 10-8 that I feel like I mean, I'm not a poker pro anymore, but it was a hand I really, I mean, it wasn't like, the, I'm not sitting here saying,
look at the lingo, multi-way pot, overbetting pot.
Yeah, he you like, know what's yeah, going on, he, man. I mean, like, he game. Like, what do you know? He just, it was, I got a call, looking back on it, I know it feels leaky to call the turn, but I could have called the turn and still
and evaluate, one. See what's
and
going
the
on.
The river came a four card straight and I would have been able to check hero fold and been like, you know.
Right.
So it was a mistake, and I was but see, that, I feel like I was in a weird mindset after.
Yes, that listen,
like,
that's
he called me an hour before the tournament, and that was not helping my mindset.
Right. I mean, that's the thing about, you know, athletes or poker or anything, right? You want to be super focused, laser, outside distraction. There's no question in the head, in your head, like you're kind of going, you know, you're definitely overthinking stuff or probably kind of stressed out, and like that's an interesting spot. But I think again, you're trying to do a lot of stuff. You want to support your friend. You want to support Moneymaker. You know, in the back of your head, you also know the odds, right? To actually final table. Was not easy. Right?
No, so it's like, I was it's only like, one bullet. You know, it was good effort. I was just happy, really happy with that effort. You know, and it's just a poker thing. I mean, it's just, it's all about closing. Like, I feel like my whole career, I've always been really good at getting deep in tournaments, but I'm not, I mean, I'll call it what it is. I'm not the best closer. And so my whole career is just littered with 12s to 15s.
Speaking of closing, how about the ladies? Are you, for the viewers out there, are you single, married, engaged? You know, closing. How are you with the ladies?
I'm kind of single. Closing. But, you know,
that's going to put you on the spot.
No, I know. Kind of single. I don't know. Kind of seeing somebody. But it's okay. It's kind of
private.
It's a few weeks in right now. So I don't know. I'd say it's not. I mean, I don't know.
All right, fair enough.
Just but we're out
you
there.
Start talking about closing. I don't know much about your person. I don't mean to put you on blast.
No,
I just
you're good. See no, we're out there. We're out there doing it.
You're in the mix. Okay. Good to know. And what are you most excited about Barstool right now? Because it is a big name. It's a big brand. Obviously, gaming is super exciting. Poker starting to get regulated a little bit. Pennsylvania, Michigan, it's starting to come into play. Sports legal at a federal level. Things are changing and very fast. It's becoming not taboo. You know, you see the lines on TVs, on apps, they're showing it. It's becoming more, there's a lot of opportunity, it seems. What is your take on the current landscape of gaming and sports right now?
Well, the biggest thing for us is we got a big deal. We signed a huge deal with DraftKings that started after the Super Bowl. And so Barstool has an awesome partnership with DraftKings. And they had a partnership like when DFS started 10 years ago. They're both Massachusetts companies, so there's big history and relationship there. So the sports gambling is the big deal here. The poker, it's unfortunate because me and you are poker guys, but the poker is just nothing compared
to that. I mean, that's kind of how it's always been, right? In casinos, they have poker, but slots, gaming, sports has always like been the moneymaker. Does it feel different? Is it like been a big shift in culture where now with regulators and now that it seems like gaming's really been opening up lately just from sports and from illegal at a federal level? Like, is that, would you say that? Because it wasn't always the case, right? In the UK and other parts of the world, it's very like common. You walk around the street, there's sports books. It's just like everyone's betting everywhere. And of course, in the US, people bet, but like with bookies or private. But now it just seems a lot less taboo. Would you say that's fair? Like
oh, it's much totally more.
No, it's like,
it,
yeah.
Yeah, it's totally fair. And it's the way it should be. And, you know, that's a big part of my value is like I have that gambling background and, you know, I'm not sitting here. I mean, I'm no pro sports better. I don't claim to be. I would say I'm above average at football and I'm good at poker are kind of the two things I'm good at. I'm like an educated gambler. So I'm good about like not taking like sucker sides and feeling out that kind of stuff. But I mean, I can't, you know, by no means am I some guy saying I'm like sharp or anything like that. But
you had the big WSOP score. You scored for 90 grand.
Yeah, 2011, man. That was fun. I ran a 5-bet Antonius on day 3, too. And it's just like crazy. It was like the hand of my career for sure.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So you get a 90K score there. What about from any type of other forms of gaming or gambling? Like, have you had any big parlay bets or one that stands out or anything that's
I had a UConn in 2014. I had them I had them like 300-1 to win the national title when they won it with Napier and got hot.
300 I hedged some of it.
Well, it was actually funny. The site had the wrong one. They were 100-1 in like January, and the site I was on had them 300-1, had a misstep, and I caught it. And it wasn't like I even knew UConn would win. I just saw they made a mistake. And
You're like, that's a good spread. Like, oh, you can maybe hedge it later.
Give it to me, you know? And then they ended up winning it. So that was probably my best future story ever.
Wow.
Poker wise, I chopped an F tops for like 76 in April of 2010. Was my biggest online
full
one.
Full tilt. Little shout out to F tops, old school.
Oh yeah, dude. I used to run hot. Man, I ran real hot on full
tilt. I love it. No, that was the most fun. I think when that software came on at the time. Now I'm biased, but GG, you know, it's world class, and they got great software partnering with WSOP. But Full Tilt was ahead of its time. You know, when that kind of new software came out, that was fun. Those were the glory days for online poker. Tell me about your podcast, Wake Up
Mincy. Yeah, so I have a morning show that's like 8 to 8:45, Tuesday through Thursday. It's like, it's pretty chaotic. Like, I'll have a lot of Barstool guests or other guests, but then I'll do, I mean, I don't know. I come in there just high energy and like a robe, like chugging coffee, raising hell. I mean, it's kind of like a morning show unlike any other. It's all about bringing like the high manic energy to life. But yeah, it's fun. It's Tuesday, Thursday. It's at wake_up_Mincy on Twitter and Wake Up Mincy on Instagram. Check it out. We've got Rumble. We have a deal with Rumble. And so we have YouTube, but you know, I got a YouTube channel too, but we'll, you know, we also do a lot of stuff with Rumble right now because we have a Barstool partnership with them. But yeah, it's fun. Like today I had Billy Football from Barstool on. He's running for Congress in New York, which is insane. He's 25. So I had him on to talk about his congressional run today, for example. But you know, like last week I had Will Wade, the basketball coach from McNeese State on, you know, I'm having all kinds of just random guests on and, you know, trying to build it, you know, it's, and then I just, you know, continue to be part of all the Barstool stuff, whether it be gambling streams or the Yak or, you know, whatever. It's just a new and exciting adventure every day in this company.
That's you do have some personal gear, don't they?
I got some more merch coming out. I've had a bunch of stuff the last few years, but right now I don't have anything in store, but I got something I'm working on the next couple of weeks coming out.
And what's this Miss Peaches thing? I've seen that.
That's Dave rescued a pit bull.
Yep, I saw that.
Yeah. What? And so that was what the charity I gave the $1,000 to was that rescued charity out of Atlanta, I believe. But Miss Peaches, Dave rescued her, and now she's got like 900,000 Instagram followers in like a month. They really broke the mold when Dave Portnoy came into the world. He's a one of a kind. You know, I absolutely love working for him. I mean, he goes extremely hard on me, but I earned that, so I don't blame him. But you know, ultimately, I'm so loyal to him, and he's been so good to me. And, you know, no matter how much heat I take publicly from him, you know, I'm just going to take it and grin and bear it. And as long as I can work in this company for him, I'm honored to get to do it. And I'm very lucky. And he knows that. And, you know, it's part of the content thing. I mean, the best content I think we have here is when Dave's losing his mind on people. And I'm ultimately, you know, me and Rico Bosco are pretty much Rico probably gets it more than me, but I'm probably number two on the direct line of fire from Dave. But you know what? We should all be so lucky, you know,
and
part of life is taking constructive criticism, I think.
Yeah. And what do you enjoy the most with your job? Is it the Wake Up Mincy podcast? Is it some other stuff?
No, it's just the lifestyle thing, man. Cause Barstool, the amount of doors it opens, just being a part of Barstool Sports, it just blows my mind. The stuff you get into, you just never know what's going to happen. Like, it's crazy. I mean, the stuff I get, you know, I get to just go to, you know, sporting events or music. Or I get recognized everywhere I go. That's what blows my mind, is me being able to walk anywhere around the United States and get recognized. Like, I'm some dude from Monroe, Louisiana, you know, and it used to be just big in the South, but now it's like if I'm in airports walking around, I get recognized. I mean, I'm getting recognized really everywhere I go. And, you know, People ask if that's annoying, and I'm just like, hell no. It's surreal.
And it's probably the right amount of fame, right? Like, it's nice to be noticed and like get appreciated and you get to talk. It's interesting, but at some point it might, you know, it feels like the right sort of, and then the people that enjoy sports and enjoy content, you get to be your authentic self. It's gotta be pretty, it's cool. That's gotta be rewarding for people to come and say, hey,
it's unbelievable. And you know, we all have moods where, you know, we have antisocial days and stuff. And so if I'm not in a social mood, I stay at home and watch YouTube and chill out and just get away from it, you know? And my family, we got a lake house in Mississippi that I'll go disappear to if I want to get off the grid for a little bit.
Yeah.
But no, I love it. I'm so in. And I still love poker. I want to say, like, you know, obviously I'm not full-time in the poker world, but you obviously do a lot of business stuff too.
Yeah.
When you have steady income and you get to play on the side and you don't have to feel that roller coaster of stress, poker's awesome. But if you're like solely focusing on poker, and especially you get back and you get makeup when you're broke, like that's just, you know, that's the worst. But, you know, now, you know, I probably wish I played a little more poker than I do, but I'll still play the World Series main. We got a World Series Grand Victoria Chicago main event coming up like April 13th weekend. I'm going to play in. I'm trying to make Moneymaker Tour in either West Palm or Daytona. You know, I still like to play a little bit on weekends when I'm free, and you know, I'm going to keep always do that. I mean, I really, really enjoy it. And I don't know, you know, it's just really, it's so much more fun though, when you don't have to feel stressed about it.
And tell me about the Poker Go experience. You mentioned, you know, Brent and Jeff and obviously Carrie, what they built there. It's really, really impressive. And it's an amazing product. How was that versus how would you compare that to sort of your what you've been doing the last few years with Barstool?
I absolutely loved working with those guys. Brent, Jeff, loved the whole Poker Go. Everything about that was great. I hated living in Vegas for 5 or 6 weeks during the summer. Mm-hmm.
I've been doing that a long time. It is hot and it's a tough
and stuff and you do it like that. It's fine. Cause then you have like a balanced life where you can go to the grocery store and go to the gym. But like, I was like living on the strip for 5 or 6 weeks and it's just, man, I can't live out of a hotel room that long. But ultimately I love the Poker Go thing and I love the relationships I had there. It had nothing to do with them. I just don't know if I'd ever do 6 weeks. And I also think the World Series thing, if you're a good mixed game player, I think it's awesome. But like these 7,000 person field hold'em events, man, like, dude, who wins? You know, and it doesn't matter how good you are. Like, I mean, obviously, if you're like super elite, yeah. But, you know, World Series to me is all about getting to play for real money for all those other events. And so what you're going to see out of me now is like I'll go before the main and play like the mini main or whatever and then play the main. But that's kind of going to be what you're going to see from me. But I still like the regional main events, you know, and yeah, I've done some stuff, the Run Good Tour and the Moneymaker Tour, and played some MSPT events here. And you'll still see me playing those. And then with Big Cat starting to back me, that means it's going to be content with Big Cat. And he's going to be making me do updates. You know, he's going to be, God knows what he's going to ask out of me on the Poker Tour. But getting him involved is huge because that means it becomes more Barstool content. And that means it'll get way more eyes on it for poker. So it's good. You know, it's a good thing.
For sure. And tell me about the Cracking Aces podcast and what you've done with that in the past. Cause I know, you know, Barstool Nate's been on the podcast here and I know he's involved and there's Jake as well there. Can you tell me a little bit about the
Cracking Aces? Yeah, well, it's kind of like, he's going to bring it back in summer right now, but it's Nate's thing. Cause Nate has been a Barstool since like 2013, long before I got there. And so it's Nate's pod and he built social and I was part of it. And I enjoyed being part of it, but that's kind of his brand. And so I'm definitely a part of it, but you know, I kind of just go as he goes on that. I actually, to tell you the truth, when I got hired by Barstool, I made a point to come in here and say like, yeah, I'm an ex-poker player, but like you built this for 10 years. I'm not trying to come in and step on your toes. I want to be part of the team and help build this with you. But I didn't want it to be any kind of us butt heads or anything like that.
And who do you collaborate the most with within Barstool? Like who are you most day to day?
A lot of the Chicago office people. I'm real close with Stu Finer, who's just an unreal character. But as far as like, you know, I'm involved with all his gambling streams, like Big Cat and PFT and like Jersey Jerry. And I do a lot of stuff with Brandon Walker because he's the other SEC football guy. But yeah, I really like Nick Tirani a lot up here, He's great. He's like a comedic genius. But like the Chicago office, it's interesting. So we have like 60 people in this office. We have 300 employees in our company.
Right.
But the Chicago office feels really close knit. And so everybody's collaborating, doing stuff together. And it's a very positive work environment. It's cool. It's cool to be a part of.
You said you're deep south, Ole Miss, your guy, you've been Mississippi, but what would you say living wise? What do you love Chicago now? Or are you like,
I'd say, well, look, I did two. So I did New York for like 2 years and 3 months after I got hired. And, you know, I'm glad I did it because if I hadn't moved up and been part of that office, I wouldn't get to where I've gotten this company. But I like Chicago, like, I wouldn't even like 100 times more New York. And I'm not saying New York, like, look, love the history. Food, music, tons of stuff to do, all that. I'm not trying to say it's not like got all this culture. It just comes down to a dollars and cents situation. And the cost of living in New York, if you don't make 250K plus, man, you have nothing.
You're eating up there. Yeah.
Your rent alone. Chicago, I'm not saying it's cheap here, but like my quality of life here is just so much better. And there's, you know, and you look at somewhere like Chicago compared to New York. I mean, yeah, New York probably has some more stuff, but like, plenty to do here. Great food, music, sports. We got all that here too. So sure. I'm way happier here. And I'm also, you know, I'm in my fourth year at the company now, so I make more money. So
yeah,
that also helps too. I was in New Orleans last year and working remote. And, you know, I'll always love NOLA. I lived there for 6 years total. But the thing is, and you're seeing this around America, the working remote thing that was going on during COVID, man, people are realizing you need to be in these offices. Your productivity is not the same if you're not in the office. And when you're talking about Barstool, like we're on camera all day in the office. And so I knew when Big Cat said, I need you in this office, you don't say no to that. You know, right. Like I know by moving up here, I think I'm part of the future of this company. And so that was part of that decision.
Yeah, that, I think you're absolutely right. I agree. You can't really replace it. Also, certain things are just, you got to have it. You got to have the in-office camaraderie and sort of the energy, right? Whereas some people, I think there are some industries and things remote makes sense. But it's got to be fun. That seems like the dream. It's definitely a dream job. You get to watch sports, hang out, talk, make content, have a good time. It seems like you got a good thing. I have a random question. My dad, lived in Ann Arbor for a long time. He's like a diehard Michigan fan. He was asking me about the Juwan Howard. He had a question for you about Juwan Howard and the firing at Michigan. How do you rationalize a coach hits another coach, gets to keep his job, but then loses 23 games and gets fired? What are your kind of takes on these type of controversial events or things where something goes out? Like, how would you kind of break that down or explain?
I don't know a ton about when he hit the other coach or any of that stuff, so I don't really want to get into that. I just know that when you're at the University of Michigan and you've got the money and resources you've got, winning 3 Big Ten games is going to get you fired, period. Right. And, I know he had that other incident and stuff, but I really, it's hard for me to speak on something I don't know a lot about. It's
right.
Controversial, especially, I try to dodge that kind of stuff. But you're a controversy expert.
That's why I'm coming.
Yeah, ultimately, you win 3 Big Ten games and you're getting canned. And hiring Dusty May, who got Ford Atlantic to the Final Four last year, I think that's a really, really good hire. So I think ultimately, I think it's a good move for him.
And how do you with understanding poker, how do you kind of with results oriented or luck, right? Because like this is a great example too. FAU coach, probably a great coach. They get to the Final Four. There's some luck in that too, right? And now, like if he had made the Sweet 16 only or Final 32, probably doesn't get hired. So like how do you sort of attribute about luck and preparation opportunity? Like where do you kind of put luck and skill what I'm asking you is,
I kind of know what you're asking here. And I think the poker stuff applies to life here. And this is something that was a big life experience for me, because I was a hothead when I was younger. I was like, we've all seen the young hothead poker players take bad beats and lose their mind and bitch to everyone and can't wait to tell our friends. I was one of those when I was like 22, 23. And it just beat it out of me. And I actually read Drew Brees' book, Coming Back Stronger. And there's this whole chapter in it about, like, you can't get upset over what you can't control in life. And it just, this light bulb went off in my brain. I was like, why am I wasting all this energy when my 10s get beat by 7s for all the money with 6 left? When did you make the correct decision? Yes. Okay. Let it go. And it was a huge light bulb that went off for me, because I was like a hothead. And then like, I just, by reading that, I just like completely changed how I looked at it. And like the top poker players, I know you're very elite yourself, I get really pissed, like the hand, the queen jack hand I told you about at the table, because I made a mistake in that hand. But if I make the right decision and get sucked out on, then like I made the right, what can you do? So I think that was really more what I learned. And I don't have a hot temper anymore. And I just think that's part of getting older and some perspective, but life's hard no matter what. So you really can't waste energy over stuff you can't control in life. You just got to focus on what you can.
Yeah, that's well said. And do you notice that you apply skills in poker? Would you say that to the real world, like in particular, is there anything that you've...
Yeah, I just noticed? Think like you see how much variance there is in day-to-day life. And like in like sports gambling and stuff, like, you just don't... The poker stuff makes you not overreact stuff in day-to-day life. It's the old, it's never as good or as bad as it seems, And I think it just that poker background's kind of, whenever really bad things happen to me, I don't freak out anymore. I just deal with it, And I think my whole life, I've been saying this a lot lately, like I've had a lot of, we all go through bad things. I mean, it's life, but I feel like every time something really bad's happened to me, it's ended up being a blessing in life. You just don't see it at the time, it's kind of what will be. Like one big example of that, I was chip leader of the New Orleans main event in 2013 with like 12 left, and I got eighth, and it was like 240K to first. You got chopped. Dan Wyman was actually in on the chop. It got chopped like 4 ways for over 100K each, and I kind of blew that too. But if I would have like chopped that in 2013, then I would have had a lot of money and like kept playing poker and partying, and I never would have gone back to school.
Right.
And ultimately got into sports media and got into Barstool. And at the time, it like crushed me that I didn't close, but actually – it was good,
The analogy too with that I always use, and it's one of the things where I thought was the worst thing in 2011, the Black Friday, right? It's like, oh, all of a sudden now in the U.S. it's like it closed down, poker's over, and I was playing from my friend's house, and we were, it was like wow, you gotta either move to Canada or Mexico or be done. And in the moment it seemed terrible, but then kind of, I was like out of shape and not really traveling. Yeah. And I started going to tours, go around the country, go to different stops, start playing more tournaments, and then got in better shape. And we're, you know, like one of those things where it just feels like things are over and it's the worst, but then you kind of like, it's a reset. So I think that's a great point. You get to kind of,
And it's just, life's about evolving and adapting. And I totally agree with that. I mean, if like black, you know, like let's say online kept going, if I was still doing really well and I never left the poker world, then like, I know a lot of people that are still grinding, but it's the people that are the most successful are the ones that have like branched out into business and still play on the side. You see that like a lot, but like the people that are still out on that circuit, like 13, 14 years later, I mean, I'll be out grinding around them and they're broke and in makeup. And I'm like, man, y'all are still doing this shit like 14 years later. I don't know. Like I kind of look at it, it's like eye opening. I'm like, man, you know, don't get me wrong, I still love poker, but I'm so glad that like my life is.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you got the right balance too. I mean, that's like you said, if you get to play and you got income and you're doing your own thing, it's sort of fun. You get to once in a while play. You really want to be there. You have a good time. The stress is not the pressure. And I think that's the, you know, obviously that's ideal, right? That's the way to play instead of be like it's every pot is life or death or you're stressed out. And again, you can kind of, you can find ways to figure that out, whether it's being staked or backed or, you know, take down, you know, make sure it's not too much for you. Cause that's, I think that's something I wanted to ask as well. One of my last questions for you is about people have addictive personalities, but with sports, it's very intense, right? Like it's fun. Like you mentioned earlier, you should be able to gamble, right? You should be able, if you're going to gamble, like why not have a regulated site and make sure it's good than trying to find a bookie and whatnot. But how do you sort of like promote that with people about like, hey, you can gamble, it's fun, you can sports bet, but not to go overboard because you can't.
Yeah, well, here's what I mean, that's what I always say about it. Like, I think the unit shaming stuff is the stupidest thing of all time. Here to ultimately be entertained. I bet $50 a unit, you know? I mean, like a max bet for me is like a 4 units, like $200, but I'll bet $50 on a game. I lose, I get 3 hours entertainment for $55, and that's what I spend on a nice meal or a concert ticket, you know? And so that's how I look at it. It's entertainment, and if people want to make fun of me for that, then that's their problem. You know, I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, good for you. If you want to bet $5K a game, God bless, man. Do what you want to do, you know? But I think it's just all about perspective, and that's just how I look at it. And I enjoy being entertained by games, and, you know, I think I know a decent bit about it. But, you know, it's not – I mean, I'm not trying to make a living betting on sports. I can damn sure tell you that. And as long as you keep perspective on it. You know?
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, it just like that, it is tough because, like, just like anything, there's people that are going to be addicted or have just an addictive personality. So it is a bit with gaming and gambling. Like, that's one of the things in poker. It's just like, I always want to try to be as, you want to be as transparent and open as you can and say, look, you want to play. It's great. There's a lot of positives you can take away from it. But you also just don't want to overdo it. So it's, you know, I don't know. It's, I think, again, people gaming, it's great. Historically, people bet on sports, right? It's just how it is. People like to bet. They like to have a little sweat, whether it doesn't need to be crazy. And I think that right now it's the U.S. in particular does seem like it's in a good place. I will say it's a bit, it is a little in your face, right? There was a period where drafts.
It's every other commercial. It's too
every
no,
commercial. It was a lot, so it's a little. You know, I mean, it felt there's times where it feels a little overkill, but at the end of the day, I do think that, you know, it's amazing where technology, the apps, the stats, the tracking. There's also a lot of learning, right? You follow. You get to know players better. You get to understand statistics more, and there's a lot of cool stuff within it. So yeah, it seems like we're in a good place though.
I think the one mistake I made looking back on poker, and this is a lot of tourney players do this, I just should have always played way more cash than I did. You know, it's like when you get into that tournament mindset, you're always chasing that like pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And you get this, there's this big fallacy, and Chance Cornet talks about this. It's like, you think like, oh, I win this 200K, my life's going to change. But like, that's not how life works at all. Yeah. Like, life's about your relationships and balance and experiences. And it's great to have money. I mean, like, it's obviously a huge thing, but you know, there's nothing wrong with having a good spot in a 1-3 game and going in there and pulling 300 or 400 out a night and, you know, hammering that. Like, that's, you know, I feel like especially when I lived in New Orleans, I should have played at Harrah's a lot more because how good those games were. And I always struggled with that more than I should have. And if I had it to do over again in poker, I would, like, you know, try to play 20 hours live cash a week and then some online live tourneys. But that's perspective, you know.
What was the live cash game scene like back then? Was it mostly at the casino? Was there some good home games?
There were some good home games, but I've always been so sketched out about home games. Just all the cheating scandals and stuff. I mean, they're just I don't know. It just never was for me. I know you'd get in some good ones that seem too good to be true and idiots and stuff, but like, it's just too shady, man. There's just too much of it in the poker world. So I would like to just go play cash at Harrah's would be kind of like what I like to do. And
is that
no, it's 1-3, but it'd be like 1-3-6 and no cap. So I mean, to play like 2-5.
Is that New Orleans? Is in New Orleans? Is there one? I've been there to the Harrah's. Is that the one? Is there multiple casinos?
Oh, that's
that
just like the one in NOLA. They got like kind of monopoly.
Is that, have they upgraded that? Because I remember.
They're great. They're making it a Caesars now and putting some money into it. So it's really
okay.
Yeah, it's nice. But I still play there. Decent bet. I mentioned Beau Rivage and Biloxi a lot because I was an hour away from New Orleans. I used to love playing there too.
What about like Tunica? Those are sort of the.
Oh, yeah. No, I went to Ole Miss. I came up playing in the Horseshoe Tunica. I've had a lot of success there too. I've just run around that Southern Circuit a lot. That was always kind of my thing, was play the South and play online.
And what about Ole Miss? What was that like? What was college life in Ole Miss? Party school, just a blast.
Yeah, it was great. Well, I got into poker playing $5 games in the frat house off the moneymaker thing, and then I started playing online and playing in Tunica. It was kind of how I got into it. But yeah, great party, SEC scene. I got into poker like so many. When I started making a lot of money in poker, I quit caring about school because that's what being young is. You don't have any perspective, and idiot.
Yep.
But it actually worked out because I'm glad I didn't finish, because that me going back in 2014 was such a big part of like my journey. And so I'm actually glad that it's like funny, but like, you know, I'm like glad I screwed up in school when I was younger, because going back and finishing was such a big part of what ended up happening in my life. So, you know, it's like all perspective.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's really cool. Well, listen, you know, if anyone needs to a reminder where they can follow you, tell me what's the best spot.
Yeah, at Stool Mincy on Instagram and Twitter. But please follow Wake Up Mincy 8 to 8:45 every Tuesday to Thursday. And find me all over Barstool Sports, boys. I'm everywhere.
I love it. Well, listen, we got, there it is. Wake Up Mincy's building his personal podcast. He's got a bunch of social media content, as he mentioned earlier, with Dave, sort of discovered from a clip, just straight passion and from the heart. And really cool to see your journey, man. I love to connect. I'm glad we got to do this podcast, and we will be doing more content in the future. Let me know if you get down to Miami ever.
And I was, just like I said, I was in West Palm for that Moneymaker event. They've got another one in early May that I'm trying to squeeze in. It's just it's a first world problem, but like I'm getting pulled in so many directions, it's almost like hard to manage day to day.
That's my buddy Glenn in Austin. You might have played with him. I bet you have, but he always says that so many social engagements, so little time. It's a good problem to have, but hopefully the next time you're deep playing for a six-figure score, there's no other commitments and Dave doesn't come barking down, you know. And I get it. That's a crazy situation. I feel for you on that, but it looks like it worked out.
Is like ultimately controversy. You know, that's why Barstool is what it is. It's controversy. Like, I mean,
yes,
with all the company was talking about for a week, you know, ultimately, yep. I mean, obviously it's not good that he's pissed off at me, but there are millions and millions and millions of clicks, and you saw the poker world blew up about it, and it was, you know, so ultimately that's what it is, man. We're in a clicks game. So
all right, 10,000 entries in the main event, 10K buy-in. Dave Portnoy gets put in for this year's main event. What's his over-under position?
So I actually think Dave said he wants to play the main event one time, but Dave has like, he can't sit there and grind day one, 2-hour levels. He'd lose his mind. So I've told Dave, I'm like, if you're going to play the main, just show up day two, you get 60K at 4,800 and just do it. You know,
Max late reg, you skip all the day one ABCD 2A. Come on, 2B.
Yeah, you just get there for day two. It's every day after that. Get
some chips or go.
Yeah, that's the way Dave has to. Dave can't do day one.
Dave clears off day 2A. He comes, or day 2B comes in this year, let's say. Okay. He knows he could be free the next 3 or 4 days. He's willing to give his best, put his phone away, kind of focus in good poker. What is his over under finish? 10,000 entries in the main, 10K.
Oh, I hadn't played any poker with him. So he used to play party poker some back in the day, he said. But I just feel like with Dave, I bet he would be a real good poker player, but he's like a horse racing sports gambling, like,
yeah,
he's the type. And that, I'm telling you, those 2-hour levels, man, I mean, you know, I know how to do it. You're a grinder, you know, used to, but I mean, those 2-hour levels really beat it out of you if you're like,
who take Barstool Nate out. Last question. Who of your crew, who would go the deepest in the main event? Who's the best shot?
I'd probably say Smitty. He got day 3 a couple years ago. I mean, I'd probably say him.
Okay.
But yeah, I'd probably be my guess. Nate can get a lot of chips, but he's like real spazzy. So like, it's like roller coaster with him. But I mean, he's capable of running it up. I mean, he has trouble reining it in. Like, you know, and you know, when you're a grind, like I just used to grind forever, you know, it's like the maneuvering, you know, protecting your situation. And that is a huge part of it. And it seems like the 2-hour level kind of get to him on that front.
For sure. Okay. Well, listen, we're going to see you then. GG, WSOP.
Yeah, absolutely. Have
you been to the new venue? It's not the Rio anymore. You know that.
Yeah, no, I did Horseshoe last year, man. I really hope they did something about the cigarette thing there, man. Hated it. That really got to me. Last year there, I think that was like the being in their day to day. I don't know. I thought the smoking thing was extremely bad there.
I know there was that was brought up. I believe there is something being worked on that. Also, the registration. I know I was just at the WSOP GG Bahamas. Super, super easy now. Literally click a button, register. Don't have to be in the lines. You can find your account. Like crazy upgrade in software. Like that was it was really interesting to see, because that's annoying, right? Go in the lines and deal with all the stuff. You can just kind of do it from your phone mobily and get in there. But listen, I know you got a crazy day. It's March Madness.
Thank you for having me, though. I really appreciate you having me, and stay connected. Look forward to hopefully getting to Florida at some point. I need to do more. You know, I need to check out GG for sure.
Let's do it. And who's winning the March Madness? Who's your team? Who do you got picking to win it right now?
Okay, well, everybody's going to say UConn because they're the chalk. I mean, team I like is 33-1. I don't know if they can win it, but I think this Illinois team's on one right now. Or I think they are really on one. Terrence Shannon, I think, is the best player in the tournament. I don't know if they can win it, but they're the sleeper that I'm looking at right now.
I love it. You've hit 300-1, 33-1. That seems like a drop in the bucket. So we'll wish Illinois luck. And thanks again for the time. And Barstool Mincy, we'll see you on the felt, and we'll see you on the podcast in the future. Appreciate the time. Number 197, The Flow, show in the books. Thank you so much.